Welcome aboard, you people. This is the Starship. Rokan show up for another day. Broadcast insolence. And we've got Jenda Salvo today in for Lauren Lapka.
Good afternoon.
And Andy Mazur in for Kevin Powell, because both of those figures are in Mexico, where it is 80 degrees. They keep sending me pictures, and I swear to God, I want to kill them. It's like, it is unbelievable. I got a picture of feet. This is the most annoying thing that you see now on the Instagram and all the rest of it. When people are on vacation, they take a picture of their feet, right? They're lying down on a chaise lounge, or in this particular case, some floaty deal in a pool, and all I can see is like a pool and then an ocean and then feet. And I, you know, in all honesty, I don't like the foot. You know, it's not my favorite part of the body. I'll be honest with you.
I really thought the pictures of Kevin's beer bottles would make you more upset.
Yeah, well, there was that. I also saw they just put it up on
there
CLTV.
It is.
Yeah, there
Lauren's
you go.
Pretty feet.
Yeah, that's what's going on there. It's like, and or either that or Kevin shaving his legs. I'm not quite sure which that is.
Quicker tan.
Yeah, but this is a this. I'm happy for them, but I'm not so happy for them that I want to know about it. That's how I feel.
Yeah, I like the ones that they're pretending to work with the interviews of these people at like the bar.
Yeah, Kevin is joining us right now in the Super Celebrity Hotline, so we're going to change the name of it for him. Are you enjoying yourself, Kevin?
No, it's horrible. There's so much sun and there's no alcohol, bro. It's brutal.
Yeah, that's all I've been getting some random texts. That's all I'm going to say. And some pictures of the three, you and Lauren and her friend on a balcony, and there's wine glasses and all kinds of things. Now, exactly why are we paying for this? You know, the new bosses want to know.
I mean, I really don't know, to be honest with you, but I'm here. I mean, this whole thing went down like this, and I'm not kidding. Kevin, do you want to go to the Sox on the Beach Mexico trip? I said, sure. They said, okay. And that was literally the end of the conversation. So now I'm here. I definitely don't have a Corona in my left hand while I have my phone in the right hand. And I agree with you, though, that the feet pictures need to end. That's an epidemic. We need to start the war on feet pictures with the Instagram.
totally
we're having a great time. There's a ton of awesome listeners here. A lot of, hey, where's that Rokan at? I go, he's back in Chicago. So now we're awesome. That's a good time.
As opposed to the Cubs convention where they go, oh, where is Rokan?
Kind of. Yeah, the one guy's like, hey, how you doing? My name's Tommy Plummer's Union 137. I'm like, okay.
That's right. That's right up our alley, pal.
Yeah, all right. Right up our alley.
So there's no Sox news today, though. Nothing big has happened. I'm waiting.
Not yet. You know, it's interesting, though, because I asked yesterday, there was a, and this will be up at WChamber.com. Jason Cam was talking with us, and I asked him about that. I go, look, I mean, this is a winter meetings week, which is when rumors fly and there's news and people are on social media. And I was like, look, I know you're a player, but just do you invest time just like all the fans? And he was like, I've been updating my Twitter every 15 minutes. So he obviously cares, too. I mean, he's right there with the fans. This is a moment where the White Sox can really add a lot to the franchise. So it's an interesting time to be around Sox fans and talk to the players. And, of course, Ozzie tonight stole the show, which is no surprise. But, yeah, there's a lot of buzz around the winter meetings of the White Sox.
Yeah, Ozzie. How sober is Ozzie? That's the other question I have.
He's the most sober person here, bro. Mm-hmm. Just like me. Most sober person. We're right there. Toe and toe.
That's right. Hold on. I just don't want you to drown on the beach in sand. That is my great fear right now. All right. We'll talk to you tomorrow. Thank you, Kev.
Love you. Bye.
Love you, too. Is it wrong? Jen DeSalvo is going to tell us what the traffic and the weather is right now.
Wake up with the Steve Cochran Show, now 5 to 9 on 720 WGN.
Radio Chicago, WGN.
Life after combat, a Marine veteran shares his continuing battles, an intimate portrait from the home front tonight on WGN TV News at 9.
Speaking of that, here's Ben Bradley from the WGN TV Newsroom on the Rokan Show.
Hello, Ro. Good to be with you on this Tuesday afternoon, even though it's chilly and somebody left the door to the newsroom open, so we're all freezing.
Then I have a question for you.
Yes, sir.
We just spoke with young Kevin Powell from Mexico, where Kevin and Lauren are in Cancun for Socks on the Beach. Mm-hmm. And that just means what's been left on the beach. Socks and all kinds of other underwear.
Can you imagine what washes ashore near those vacation destinations?
No, I cannot. Now, the one thing I will ask you, though, is we're going to talk to Lauren in the 4 o'clock hour. We just talked to Kevin. And Kevin definitely could not operate a vehicle right now.
Ah, got it.
So,
and keep in mind, it's like an hour or two earlier.
No, it's the same time, I think, isn't it?
I think it's a little earlier. But bottom line.
Eastern time zone? Cancun is in the Eastern time zone? It's directly south of New Orleans. How's that possible? Anyway, you know what? Don't ask me. The point is this, that the question is, on the over-under, do you think that Lauren will be able to complete a sentence?
By 4 o'clock today... I've got my money on Lapka. I think she's very resilient. Now, Kevin will be, like, crying after he breaks a heel, you know, sitting on a curb with his makeup running shortly, you know, after he gets separated from the group. But not Lauren. She'll just keep right on going.
Okay. So says you. All right. What's coming up on the WGN TV News?
Following several stories, as we were first to report yesterday, Drew Peterson is now... I guess you could say he's been disappeared by the Illinois Department of Corrections. About 4 days ago, the federal facility he was being held at in Terre Haute, Indiana, reported that he was no longer with them. So yesterday we started asking the Illinois Department of Corrections, and they now say that Mr. Peterson has been transferred to a state facility outside of the state of Illinois, but they cite safety and security reasons for not saying where he is.
Okay. What's
I talked to his attorney,
about?
Steve Greenberg, an hour or two ago. Steve has no idea where he is. You know, from time to time, they move inmates around. Remember, it was after our story in 2017 about Peterson's legal bills costing taxpayers tens of thousands of dollars that the state moved him out of Menard to that federal facility. Mm-hmm. They said that it was a safer environment for him. And the state of Illinois does have agreements with other states to do prisoner exchanges, I guess, for lack of a better term. Right. That's how Jason Van Dyke wound up out east. You know, a lot of times, if somebody has a lot of notoriety in one place, they might say, hey, it's in the best interest of that inmate's safety to move him out of state. We don't know what the argument is with Drew Peterson, the specifics of it, other than the generic safety and security. But, you know, I get it. They don't want to tell us while they're moving him from point A to point B. But our understanding is, you know, this took place 4 days ago, and it's interesting that our own government, regardless of what you think of Drew Peterson, refuses to say where he's at, where in the United States he's at.
Yeah. Well, they eventually have to tell us.
Well, we filed a Freedom of Information Act request. His attorney, Steve Greenberg, said he expects he'll only find out when Drew finally gets settled and is allowed to make a phone call, which sometimes takes a while before you get those privileges once you get to a new facility.
And often they, as you point out, they do this technically, and I'm doing that air quote thing, doing that for the safety of the prisoner. And in this case, because Drew Peterson's a former police officer, the idea is that, you know, police officers who end up in jail, you know, tend to get
they're
victimized.
Targets, right.
They're targets of... You know, by especially the organized crime elements that are in jail. So that is a legitimate issue, but I just got a feeling that everybody hates Drew Peterson. It's a list of suspects. It's like Murder on the Orient Express if someone were to beat him up. You just don't know.
Let's hope he's safe wherever he's at.
Oh, sure, absolutely.
Yes, without a doubt. The other story we're following today is this deputy aviation commissioner. Did you see this? Charged with basically lying to American Express. And what we thought was interesting was he claimed to American Express that a bunch of his purchases were fraudulent, that he never made them. So you ever wonder what happens when you do that? This guy found out. He had said that he spent $1,304 on wicker patio furniture, but he said, no, I didn't do it. And then there was a $1,200 charge at Benny's Beverage Depot on his American Express. He said, nope, not mine.
That's mine.
$2,300 at Closets by Design.
Mine, too.
He disputed all those charges. Well, according to the Cook County Sheriff's Police, American Express called up those retailers and said, hey, do you have any video or do you have any recorded phone calls with customer service about these purchases, about delivery, that sort of thing? And there he was on video, according to the sheriff's police.
Oh, see, you can't see that's now that you gotta not you got to not do. Now, why was this is a city employee, though?
Yeah, he works for the City Department of Aviation.
And why does county have that case?
I don't know why Cook County investigated it. Maybe that was just the agency that American Express went to, because perhaps the locations of the stores perhaps straddled different jurisdictions. Not sure about that. But, you know, I and you know me, Ro, you and I are, you know, big aviation fans, big aviation geeks, some would disparagingly call it.
Yes.
But there are a couple things that have happened that caused me to question the airport's ability to pull off this multi-billion-dollar expansion of terminals. So let's just recap. You got the guy who can't apparently pull off the Binney's Beverage Depot and Wicker Patio Furniture
place. Now he's using, his aviation card, right? I mean, is that the issue?
I don't know. Was it his personal card or his...
Well, what difference is if it's his personal card, what difference does it make?
Well, it's still fraud. You're committing credit card fraud.
So, okay, this was a misunderstanding of the story, because the initial report in the story was that he was misusing city funds. It's that he was trying to defraud American Express?
Yeah, American Express, he went to American Express and said these were fraudulent charges. American Express then found out, no, you're there on tape buying this stuff, buddy.
Oh.
Yeah.
Okay.
But anyway, as I was saying...
Yes.
We got a couple of incidents. Like, they can't even get that damn airport train running. You know that little one that nobody operates that connects you to the terminals?
Right.
They built a huge new rental car facility that was supposed to be so easy to get to. You'd never have to take the diesel bus anymore because that automated train would just take you out there.
Right. And that's like a structure, right? It's not just a flat space.
No, it's this big, beautiful, multi-agency rental car facility
Like all the other modern airports have.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Well, you got to, you know, take the bus or walk to it now, because the airport train that was supposed to be upgraded and finished.
That thing always looked like a toy.
Yes, because they only had two cars on it.
Yeah. And you're like, maybe I'm so far away from it, it looks that small.
Yeah.
And when you actually get up on that second level and you go past the station, mm-hmm. it's really that small. It's like a clown car.
Yeah.
And it takes you around. And and you are so right. I've never, ever seen a human being actually on that train. When it goes over you're driving under it or whatever, and you look up, there's nobody on it.
Yeah. What I don't get is Disney World's been running a successful monorail for 40 years. Why can't we get that at the airport?
Everybody else has it. Like, I mean, Phoenix, I hate that airport, but Phoenix has got the monorail. A lot
Orlando,
of Orlando's got them. Well, that's, the home of the monorail.
Yeah, exactly.
Essentially what
Sorry,
that
folks. Park's closed. Moose out front, should have told you.
All right. Well, I have such...
But don't worry. Trust us with a couple billion. We'll get a beautiful new terminal for you.
This will be real nice. I got to say, when you pull up, I mean, they are working on stuff there. That's good news. I mean, they do seem to be actually, broken ground on stuff, like you said.
But if you've been through the United Terminal when there's a light rain,
and they got the
buckets, they've got the property of U.S. Postal Service mail buckets out there to collect the rain.
Yes. Well, that terminal's 20-something years old.
Yeah. I flew through LaGuardia this weekend, though, and I will say it makes O'Hare look beautiful.
Yeah, well, it depends on... Now, LaGuardia has a new place, too.
They're getting a brand new airport.
They have one new terminal now that's supposed to be beautiful. But I do like LaGuardia. It's like, that was built for when planes only carried 20 people.
Oh, yeah, the Constellation would go in there and you get 20 people on.
20 people would get on and get off, and then they'd all be wearing suits.
Exactly.
And they'd come off, everybody snazzily dressed. And when you at LaGuardia, at least at O'Hare... When you have to get between floors, or when you're going out to your, to the vehicles or to get out or whatever it is, your arrival, you don't have to actually get on stairs and then drag your carry-on down the stairs. It was built before anything you carry down to a plane had wheels.
Yeah, there were no wheels. My favorite was the New York-based flight crew. Somebody did something stupid in front of me, and the flight attendant just shook her head at me. I said, yeah, New York people are the worst. And she stops me and goes, no, New Jersey, my friend. Jersey.
That's true. Everybody has to look down on somebody, Ben.
Yeah, true.
There's one thing that we have learned.
Is that why you and I are friends?
Yeah, I think so. All right.
We'll see you on the news at 4 o'clock.
Thank you, Ben.
Yeah.
It was really a pleasure speaking with you today.
Always is.
Right, bye-bye now. All right. We'll see him at the 4 or the 5. And then the WGN-TV news. It starts with Ben at 4 and then goes 5, 6, 9, 10. Right? And it never ends. seems to never end. Thank God. All right, coming up on the program, we're going to check out. Listen to this. Oh, pay attention here, people. This is important. There's a fresh salad concern. There apparently is E. coli in salad, and a bunch of it has been recalled. We'll tell you what to look out for coming up. ABC News will be here to do that with us. And then we're actually going to talk to, at this holiday season and around the time where it's getting super cold outside, the Chicago Coalition for the Homeless has a message for us about what people can do to actually help the situation. It's become a big sort of national argument and issue, but this city has been struggling with it for a long time, and the Chicago Coalition for the Homeless is right at the tip of that spear for that fight. So we'll talk to them about ways that you can help, we can help, this holiday season. All right. In the meantime, we've got the news with Kim Gordon from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom. It's the Rokan Show right here on 720 WGN. Coming up in the 4 o'clock hour, we're going to give Lauren Lapka a breathalyzer test all the way from Mexico. Brett Baer is going to join us. I don't know if you saw the news, but there were two articles of impeachment that were passed today, not passed today, but were issued today by the House of Representatives that will be voted on next week. And now the fighting is beginning over what the impeachment trial is going to look like. And Brett Baer from the Fox News Channel will be here to explain that. And also, it's an interesting story about the words of the year. I can guess what some of them are, and they all annoy me. But in the meantime, from ABC News, we're going to get this update now on an E. coli recall of salad kits. Another case of this, which I'll never eat a salad again. Thank you very much, Brian Clark, for joining us. Appreciate it. First of all, let's explain exactly what the recall is so people understand.
Okay, Rose, so it's the Fresh Express. That's the brand name. It is their Sunflower Crisp Chopped Salad Kit. So it's a ready-made kit, and if you have that, you've got to throw it away because this is what the CDC is concerned with here.
It's an E. coli infection.
E. coli, yep. They've got 8 cases so far in 3 states, 4 of them in Minnesota. 3 people hospitalized, 1 person actually with kidney failure, but nobody has died.
Oh, but that's not good. That's
no.
It's never good when you start with a kidney failure. And E. coli can be very, especially in people who have knocked down immune systems and things like that, can be very, very dangerous for people. It can make people, you know, healthy people generally can sustain it pretty well. It's pretty uncomfortable. It's, you know, obviously, a lot of things coming out of both ends. But if you have a compromised immune system or you've got any underlying medical condition, E. coli can be deadly. So we're lucky that nothing that hasn't happened yet. There are 100 reported cases so far?
No, this one is actually, so here's the thing. This one, only 8 so far, but there's that other outbreak where they're telling you don't eat romaine from Salinas, California. Now, the CDC does not know yet if this is that same romaine lettuce, but there is romaine in these kits. So this is another outbreak of E. coli.
Okay, so there's 100 of those cases from the Salinas, California cases. What is it about lettuce that is causing all of this trouble? You know, the lettuce seems like that would be the most benign thing to eat.
Right, and where they think it's coming from, because they don't have a firm handle, is the water that's being used to irrigate the lettuce. And the problem with romaine is it's only really grown in the U.S. in 2 regions, Salinas and then somewhere in Arizona. So if there's contaminated water in that area, it affects so much of the romaine that we eat. It's not like it's being spread out at all these different farms and all these different locations. It's just such a concentrated center to grow the romaine lettuce that a little bit of contamination becomes a very big problem.
And what should be noted here, too, is washing does not help because it's the water that's being used actually goes up through the lettuce and becomes internal in the lettuce.
Right.
And that's where the E. coli lives.
Exactly. If you have this, throw it away. There's nothing you can do about it. Should be worth noting, too, the affected cases or affected packages were all Best Buy December 7th. So hopefully you don't have this in your fridge anymore anyway, because we're now well past December 7th. If you do find it, though, even if it's half eaten and, oh, I haven't gotten sick, nobody's gotten sick, doesn't matter, throw it away. And then sanitize wherever in the fridge it was stored, the drawer, the shelf, whatever it is. Just get rid of it, get it out of the house.
Ryan, I do that every day, no matter what. I sanitize every day. I sanitize myself. I sanitize the refrigerator. I sanitize the stove, everything. Is there a sense that there some sort of lack of government oversight here? Is there some sort of concern? Because it seems like this, especially for domestic, we've heard about this in, you know, like Mexican-grown vegetables and things like that. But we now are increasingly hearing it about American-grown.
Well, there is an interesting back and forth specifically with romaine lettuce, and the Obama administration had changed some of the regulations about when the water that was being used to irrigate, how often it needed to be monitored. A lot of people in the industry complained. They said, okay, this is a little too burdensome, puts too much of a task on us. So the Trump administration relaxed that a bit. Now, there's no clear way, there's no clear indication yet that this is a correlation, but the how much are we monitoring is becoming a question, and the policies that are in place.
All right, Brian Clark, ABC News. Thank you, sir. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
All right. Throw away your lettuce. I'm having to tell everybody that now. And I love romaine, right? It's the Caesar salad. And you can't have it now.
It's like playing Russian roulette with lettuce anymore.
I know. It really is. I just want the I like the hydroponic stuff now.
Oh.
Yeah.
Do you grow your own?
Yeah, I'm going to have to start growing my own.
Well, they have those aero gardens.
Let's check you with the traffic and the weather right now.
She calls out to the man on the street. Sir, can you help me?
Rokan Show right here on 720 WGN. And joining us in the studio right now, Mary Tarullo is with us from the Chicago Coalition for the Homeless, and Juanita Rogers, who is actually a woman who's dealt with this issue firsthand. And let's start first with you, Mary. Explain what the Chicago Coalition for the Homeless does.
Sure. We organize people experiencing homelessness to advocate for solutions to end and prevent homelessness. And we also provide legal services to people experiencing homelessness.
And where do you get your money?
We get our money from a variety of sources, from individual donors, from foundations, wide variety of supporters.
And let's talk about the homeless situation in Chicago, because it's become a hot button issue in Washington, right? There's a big discussion about homelessness, and you know, should there be a national what should the federal government be doing about it versus the local governments, and San Francisco's be, you know, come under the microscope and all that. But the problem has really been persistent here in Chicago for decades.
Yes. In fact, we have over 86,000 people experiencing homelessness in Chicago. 40% of that number are families. Over 16,000 CPS students are homeless. And 81% of people experiencing homelessness in Chicago are staying doubled up with others. So this basically means that they're couch surfing with people who let them stay with them, but they can get kicked out at any moment. And there's a myth that these families are somehow better off than other people experiencing homelessness just because they have a roof over their head, but that is not the case at all. You know, we organize those folks, and they tell us that oftentimes it's much worse than staying in shelters because they do not have the support that they need.
Right. And what about people who are actually on the street? Do we know what the number is there?
The number on the street is between 5,000 and 6,000.
Yeah. And it's an interesting problem, too, because there are social services, especially now it's getting super cold outside, right? There are social services. The city of Chicago has got those vans that go around, especially downtown in the where there tend to be groupings, and try to take people to the shelters, and a lot of people don't want to go to the shelters.
Well, that's one issue, is that the shelters are sometimes not really conducive to people's lifestyles. Many people have jobs. Actually, 21% of people who experience homelessness in Chicago are employed. And when you stay at a shelter, there are sometimes curfews, constraints that make that not possible. People do not feel safe in shelters. So the kinds of resources that the city is offering people who are staying on the streets are oftentimes, not conducive to people's lives, first of all, and are just not adequate. We do not have enough resources for the kinds of solutions. We know that in order to end homelessness, we need more housing. The solution is very simple. So we need more resources in order to provide that housing. And the city could step up. And in fact, you know, Chicago spends only 5% of what New York spends on homelessness, and 3% of what LA spends on homelessness. And we're part of a coalition called Bring Chicago Home Coalition, which aims to create a dedicated revenue stream at a significant scale in order to address the problem of homelessness meaningfully. And that means to provide housing with
services. And what would that housing look like?
What would the housing look like?
Yeah.
It would be affordable housing coupled with support services to make sure that people have all of the support that they need to remain housed.
Okay, Juanita, let's talk about your story here, because you have you've been homeless from time to time here in your life. You've done the couch surfing. You also with your family. You've been in shelters as well. Mm-hmm. So tell us a little bit about what your experience has been.
Well, with my experiences lately, the last thing that had really impacted me was when I was in an abusive relationship. And in the town that I came from, I didn't have the resources, or I couldn't find the resources that I needed. So I ended up moving to Chicago. Well, when I moved to Chicago, I didn't move to Chicago thinking that I was going to be homeless. I actually came to Chicago to be a part of the solution. Well, when I was looking for an apartment, I was denied an apartment because I had an eviction, and I didn't know that I had an eviction. So I ended up sleeping, with my friends, and then I ended up sleeping in my car. I slept in my car for the whole summer of last summer, up until it was cold, and then right now I'm living double up with another friend. And like she was said earlier, double up is not all that great, because sometimes, we don't have keys to where we live. Sometimes, some of the people don't have the resources that a normal homeless person would get, because we are under the radar. It's like we don't even count as being homeless. And
as was pointed out, because you have a roof over your head,
right.
So people just don't consider you to be homeless.
Right.
But you actually have no permanent
right. I have no permanent place to stay.
Is it just you, or do you have kids with you?
Right now, it's just me. My children are adults now. So
okay. And are they? They're not in the Chicago area.
My children.
Yeah.
They all went through college, and they're one's living in Maine, one's in Wisconsin, and one is out in DeKalb. So it doesn't affect them. They're pretty much.
So in terms of what you would like to see, what sort of programs would help you?
The programs I think that would help me would be, I do work full time. If I am in a situation where I feel like my hours are going to be cut, or I don't have enough hours for 1 month, I may be short. I would like to be able to go to somewhere where I can say, hey, I'm going to be short my rent this week.
Flexibility.
Right.
In that. And, yeah. And you are working.
Yes.
And what do you do?
Right now I'm a CNA.
Okay. And as a CNA, and you're making, that's an hourly thing, right?
Correct.
Yeah. In a nursing home or private home?
I do private care.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And think about that. And that's the interesting issue here, too. I when I was reading up on this, Mary, that there's a surprising percentage of people who have some college education.
That's right. 28% of people experiencing homelessness have some college education or who have graduated.
Wow.
Yeah, so we just do not have enough affordable housing to meet the need. Wages are not rising at the same rate that rent is rising at. So this is we need more resources in order to address the problem.
And your proposal is you guys are in favor of this tax, the transfer tax.
That's
on
correct.
Real estate over $1 million.
That's correct. It's an increase on exactly what you said, the tax on real estate transfers over $1 million. So high end properties.
But you want that money directed to specifically this issue.
That's correct.
Right.
That's correct.
Is that on the cities? I know that this thing has been considered, but is that part of the city's plan, is to direct it specifically to low-income housing?
We hope that the mayor will collaborate with us on the solution. She did support this while she was running for mayor, and so we know that she thinks it's a good idea, and so we hope that we can come to the table to work out a solution here.
But I'm just trying to understand that. That's not the stated, because we've had the aldermen come in here and talk about this, and some are for, some are against. The downtown aldermen are not so happy about it, obviously out in the neighborhoods where there are going to be fewer homes that are affected by this, seem to be in favor, and it's probably going to pass. But the question is, it's not been earmarked directly to you.
That's true. The mayor in the past few months has said that she wants to spend it instead on the general budget. We have a proposal on the table that would give the mayor everything that she's seeking in order to address the budget deficit and to also generate a significant amount for homelessness. So we think that it's a win-win solution that she should get behind.
All right. Thank you both very much for being here. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Mary Tarullo from the Chicago Coalition for the Homeless and Juanita Rogers. Good luck to you.
Thank you.
Hope things turn in your direction. We've got the news from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom coming your way in 2 minutes. It's the Rokan Show right here, 720 WGN. All right, like last hour, not like, we actually did this last hour. An hour ago, we spoke to our own Kevin Powell, sports director of the Rokan Show. And now the traffic, news, and weather editor, when it's not Kim, Lauren Lapka joins us. And she is also in Mexico on the Socks on the Beach. And, you know, when we were talking to Kev about an hour ago, Lauren, Kev...
By the way, I think you're missing a few titles because I feel like, you know, there's a thousand different other things that I...
Yeah, head geek. there's... Kevin didn't sound well. He sounded a little tired. You know, Mike Ditka, back in the day when the Bears were, when you could joke about DUIs and the Bears were in the Super Bowl hunt, he got pulled over after the Dallas game, after they got back from the Dallas game, and he had a little bit of a problem. He said, I was just tired.
You know, definitely just a bit tired, as well as, you know, he had a long night last night and an early morning. And, you know, he's tried to cure himself the best way possible, you know, sitting by a pool, some sunshine, and more cervezas. But, you know.
See, she's already speaking the lingo.
Keeping an eye on him. He's good. He's good.
Why such a late night and why such an early morning?
That's a great question. I can't really give you that answer.
Now, is it that you can't give me the answer?
I won't.
You won't give me the answer. All right. All right, I understand.
Let's just say everyone here on this trip is having a really good time, and we're all getting along so well.
Uh-oh.
That's all that matters. And the food and the drinks are delicious.
Mm-hmm.
Some people love the drinks more than the food.
All right, she's gone too. All right, see what's going on here. Now, this is an all-inclusive. You never have to leave the resort. That's the good news. The good news is
nice. Actually, I'm personally watching Kevin throw a football around with two strangers right now. So he's capable of moving on his two feet and has cognitive function. We're good. We're good. He's good.
Okay.
I'm making sure that he will not go down.
You know, Ben Bradley and I have a bet about who actually would have the higher blood alcohol content during these hits. And I would say, now you're a slight woman, so I'm going to guess that you're going to have the higher BAC. That's what I'm going to go with.
Oh.
You know, Kevin is a portly
guy.
You've
been out with me, and we drink, you know, whiskey a lot, so, you know.
Yeah.
I think you know that's not the case.
Yeah, I
think you know that I actually have the higher tolerance, though that doesn't make any sense scientifically at all. But
now,
it does.
Now,
it just happens to be the case.
Let me just ask you, are there any? Has there been a White Sox geek out for you since you've been there?
Oh, actually, the funniest moment of a geek out is we had our interview with Dylan Cease this morning. Obviously, you know, wonderful young catcher, or not catcher, pitcher that we have gained, you know, finally started in the summer, didn't start his full season, you know, but he's about to start his first full season. And he was wearing a Star Wars shirt. So, of course, the first question was Star Wars related because we had to address that immediately.
And is he really a Star Wars geek or is he just wearing the shirt?
No. He actually likes Star Wars. He's not as, you know, enthralled as I am, but, you know, he likes Star Wars. He hasn't watched The Mandalorian yet, so he's got to get there. He's like, yeah, I'm about to buy Disney Plus simply for that. I was like, how have you not already? But it's okay. I forgive him.
All right. Well, things are going well for you guys in Mexico. That's all I want. I just want to make sure everybody's safe. I want to make sure the kids are good. And it sounds to me like you're good. You know what?
Good times.
I believe we're going to get a call from hotel security before this is all said and done. But that's just me. Thank you, Lauren.
It was Kevin. All you have to know is it was Kevin.
Yeah. All right. Goodbye. There she goes,
Bye.
Lauren Lapka. Formerly from this radio show.
She's like the head babysitter down there, isn't she?
I don't know.
Oh, no.
No.
I think she's probably the biggest troublemaker. What about you, Ro?
Yeah.
The quiet ones are always the ones you got to watch.
I don't think that, what's quiet there? She's I think between the two of them, they're letting loose. they're plotting their escape.
They're not coming back.
Yeah, I think it's what's going
braiding
on.
Braiding hair on the beaches.
Yeah, there's something. Yeah, and then you get the braided hair and you come back and you go, I'm going to love this. And then you land and you're like, why did I do that? Let's check in now. Here's Jen DeSalvo. What's happening in the traffic and the weather?
Get real in the morning with Larry Potash, Robin Baumgarten, Paul Conrad, and the entire WGN-TV morning news team. Weekdays, 4 to 10.
Brett Baer from the Fox News Channel is joining us right now. Do you like to measure your walls, Brett? Because I know I like to measure my walls.
All the time. I mean, it's just something I do every day.
Exactly. All right. Nothing to see here in Washington today. Let's just move right along. The articles of impeachment were...
Next up in sports.
The articles of impeachment were announced today, and it looks like there's going to be a vote next week.
Yeah, they look. They just announced tonight that Thursday night, starting at 7 p.m. Eastern, they're going to start marking up in the committee. That means the legislative work of actually putting it on paper. Mm-hmm. That can be a total nightmare as far as procedural stuff. You do not want to look at it. Don't even go to C-SPAN because it's just, you know, point of order, point of order, point of order. But eventually they're going to get there, and they're going to get two articles of impeachment as referenced today in this news conference. And then it will be voted on next week, and then likely along party lines and possibly with some moderate Democrats. The Democrats are hoping to only lose 5 or less. They could lose 10. They can only lose 17 in order for it to pass.
It's likely to pass, though.
Yeah, along party lines.
And then on to the Senate.
Yes.
And now there is a conversation today about whether there is stress between the White House and Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell in terms of the tenor of the trial, assuming that there's going to be one, and that the story goes that the White House wants to make it, you know, sort of a grand event.
In total, you know, TV style.
Right, in Trump fashion, right?
Yeah.
And then Mitch McConnell wants to maintain the decorum of the Senate. As I've noticed, I've seen a lot of decorum here. So yeah. Where does that land?
Well, it's really the biggest thing is the scheduling. The White House would like to move right after the House votes. They'd like to get the Senate started. But, of course, there's a holiday in between. And you know, senators are wont to get on those planes on Thursday. And I think what he's saying, McConnell's saying, is that the trial, first of all, the other thing that happened today was the House passing the new NAFTA, the USMCA, which is a big event. And the juxtaposition of the image of, you know, the Democrats doing articles of impeachment and then giving president the biggest bipartisan legislative win of the entire presidency was very quite something. But McConnell's going to take up that after the Senate trial. And it seems like McConnell would like to fast track with no witnesses and just go. And the White House would like to, you know, relish in the fact that Democrats are going to have to vote on, you know, whether to hear from Adam Schiff and whether to press for the whistleblower and all of that.
Well, then, wouldn't Democrats then ask for Mick Mulvaney and members of the administration?
They would, and that's where McConnell's, you know, probably right, in that all you need to get there is 3 Republican votes. And, I mean, I can count them on my hand. Mitt Romney, Susan Collins, Lisa Murkowski could vote to hear from Mick Mulvaney or John Bolton or Mike Pompeo. If that happens and they have to testify under oath, you know, John Roberts, the Chief Justice, is the person in charge of the Senate trial. It's done by vote, but he makes the final call in a tie. You know, they could try. They could have to testify, which changes the whole fact pattern that Democrats have been, you know, operating on.
And if that would be enough, right? The largest legislative piece here, the redo of NAFTA, and we'll a little bit later on the program, we're going to talk about how that's going to impact Illinois farmers and Illinois businesses specifically.
It's significant.
Yeah.
I mean, it's really significant. If this had been passed, I mean, the Republicans made the point today, in the beginning of the trade negotiations and kind of battle with China, it would have given us a lot more leverage in that.
Well, it does seem to my phone. You know, my Siri just went off here, Brett, and I don't understand why.
I thought you were cueing the orchestra. I wasn't done yet.
No, not yet.
Okay.
I don't know what's going on there. Anyway, it was
thank you. I'd like to thank my family.
You know, it's weird. She just listens to everything, Brett. It makes me very uncomfortable. All right, so that's as if that weren't enough. You had two other kind of wild things happen in Washington today. First of all, the president hosted the Russian foreign minister today.
Yes.
At the White House, Lavrov.
Yep.
That seems like bad timing.
Or in, you know, Trump world, it's about stirring the pot. Who knows, you know, the motivation of that. But, yeah, the image, you had all kinds of images today.
Yes, I would say so. And then the tweeting this morning, now listen to the IG report came out yesterday, and it basically said that the FBI was within the appropriate envelope to begin an investigation in 2016.
Yeah, I mean, it said that there was in the initial launching of it that there was no political bias in the findings of the IG. But the other huge story today is that the Attorney General came out, gave this unbelievable interview to Pete Williams with NBC News, where he essentially said the whole thing is wrong, and the IG didn't look at everything, and there were so many egregious errors that this is a mistrial of justice, that this whole thing is based on nothing, and just wait for John Durham, the prosecutor, to get to the real facts of the beginning of the investigation. I mean, there's so many parts happening. It's like three-dimensional chess here.
I know, but isn't it? But that is Barr's IG, right? I mean, he's the boss of that guy, technically.
So technically, the IG operates kind of as a check to that agency, and you know, it falls under him, but he has autonomy. So you're going to hear from Michael Horowitz, the IG, tomorrow, and we'll take that hearing live.
And then one more thing. Then the director of the FBI, Christopher Wray, comes out and says, you know, that he believes that the FBI has been cleared of wrongdoing here. And then the president tweets what I read to be pretty close to a threat to Ray's job by saying he's not reading the same report I am, and this guy is not able to fix the FBI if he believes all of that. And again, this is about the 10th biggest story of the day, but still a fairly sizable story. What do we make of that?
Yeah, well, I think that's going to come up in this hearing tomorrow, and Ray is, you know, defending the FBI, obviously, but to Barr's point, if you look into the meat of that IG report, there's a lot of there. I mean, there were egregious mistakes that all seemed to go against President Trump, and, you know, at every level at the FBI. So when he gets to there's no political bias, Barr's point is he can't get there because he doesn't have access to all the people. He can only talk to people that are in the government, and there are many people who left, all kinds of things. So I expect that to be in the hearing tomorrow. But the fact that the president tweets the way he does against somebody he put in that job, you know, we're always one tweet away from changing the show.
It's pretty scary, isn't it?
Because... Oh, and then the Afghanistan story. The Washington Post, with years and years of subpoenaed documents that they finally get that say three administrations have been lying to us about Afghanistan for the past 18 years.
And that may be the most consequential thing. And you're starting to see, you know, there's a couple of different things. There's some art coming out about it. There's a movie coming out about that and about the way that this... what we were overstating, according to this report, we were overstating our gains and importance in terms of battling, whether it was the Taliban or even Al-Qaeda at that point in Afghanistan. And we're basically doing not dissimilar things than what we were doing in that Rand report in Vietnam, which
was
misrepresenting
making
numbers.
The equation with the Pentagon Papers. I mean, listen, I went to Afghanistan 13 times, and I always felt on the ground that the commanders were taking their talking points a little bit optimistically, because you looked around, and as we were trying to insert this government and get them up on their feet, I mean, they were in a completely different place as far as their ability to govern and their ability to fight the bad guys. And every time I went there, I left thinking, this is not going to go well.
No, now we're going to see that in black and white, right? Okay.
I think so.
Like I said, Brett, nothing to see here. I think you got nothing coming up on Special Report in about half an hour on the Fox
News
Channel.
There you go.
Thanks, Brett. Appreciate it.
We'll see you, man.
All right. There he goes. Brett Baer, Fox News Channel. Like I said, Special Report coming away at 5 o'clock. And as we always like to say, it's better to DVR that. It's like a, you know what you have to do? You have to, it's like a fine wine. You open it up and you let it sit there before you pour it. Stay with us. This is your cocktail before your wine. That's the way I like to look at this program. Is it too on the nose? It probably is. All right, so just think about all those things. And that happened in one day. One day in the news cycle out of Washington. Pretty crazy stuff. All right, coming up. We're going to, in the 4 o'clock hour, this is the 4 o'clock hour, but in the back half of the 4 o'clock hour, Alex Stone from ABC News is going to be here. Merriam-Webster's word of the year is, I have my own nominees for it. We'll find out if I'm right. And Adam Hoge gets us ready for the Bears versus the Packers. Sunday, gigantic moment. Hallis Hall. Brimming today. What's actually going on? Are they preparing? There's very little. The window has gotten very slight in terms of their ability to make the playoffs, but there's still hope. As of this writing, there is still hope. Kim Gordon's got the WGN news right now for the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom. It's the Rokan Show right here on 720 WGN. All right, Alex Stone is joining us. And from ABC News, Stone Pony, as he's known. And I'm bringing Alex in because there's a story today. Merriam-Webster every year they introduce a new word that's the word of the year, and actually there's a number of them, but there's one that makes it, you know, conflate to me was like the one from a couple of years ago. Now we just use that with reckless abandon. Conflate. We never stop conflating things.
Don't conflate that.
So I just did it too. It was a little form and function. I conflated the issue of conflation with Merriam-Webster. All right. So what is the word of the year this year?
Well, they say that the word of the year is they. Yeah.
Oh.
They. That they shot up 313% this year, mainly because of, they believe, because of its form as a non-binary pronoun, which was added to Merriam-Webster this year, that because of everything going on, they believe that they saw the numbers shoot up. Man, it sounds like I'm saying they a lot now that I'm focused on it. But there were a couple of key moments. One being at the beginning of the year in January, that Paris Fashion Show, there was a non-binary model, Oslo Grace. They saw the numbers shoot up then for the word they.
Yeah.
Then there was a U.S. Congresswoman who made a statement about her child being gender nonconforming.
Mm-hmm.
Numbers shot up of people searching they.
They and them. June's, right, isn't them?
Yeah. Yeah. Pride celebration in June, the numbers went up. And then in September when Sam Smith, the singer, came out as non-binary and asked to be referred to as they and them, they saw the numbers go up as well. So the claim here is being made that they say, yeah, they seems like a very general, easy, non-complex word, but this year they're going on the data, and that they saw a 313% increase, more than any other word, of people going to Merriam-Webster online and looking up the word, that is showing something about society right now with the non-binary pronoun. That it's showing what people are interested in, and therefore that is the word of the year.
Although quid pro quo, which was going to be my guess, doesn't win for the year, but it is up 644% this year in terms of searches because people are trying to figure it out. Since it's actually three words and it's all in Latin, I guess it doesn't really count.
Yeah, well, they thought about that one, and they said just based on pure numbers, there are percentages, of course, but they say based on pure numbers that they beat out. Also, Crawdad, because the novel where the crawdads sing. What do you guys call crawdads? Are they crawdads, crayfish, freshwater lobster?
It would be crayfish, probably, here.
I grew up in Northern California. They were crawdads. So, apparently not a lot of people knew what they were because they were looking them up. And then the word the, or the. You thought they was bad. It could have been the. Because Ohio State University this year tried to trademark the word the or the. And that effort failed, but it had a lot of people going to Merriam-Webster and looking up the. Also,
I'm a little worried. I'm a little worried about our intellectual capacity right now as a nation.
I know.
That's,
I know.
We have to look up the word the to figure it out.
Well, that was the first thing I thought today was who is, when it was they, and then you add in the to it, who is going to the dictionary and actually looking these words up? But apparently they are. The senior editor, Merriam-Webster, says the pronouns are the most commonly used words, go, do, have, but they're also the most ignored dictionary words until now, and that they want to highlight that because they got a new definition this year in the non-binary form, that there is, that they are constantly evolving, and there are changes to it, and that's what they're showing. But also in the mix, snitty, which was used by Attorney General Barr when he was talking about the Mueller report. So a couple of other words that it could have been, but in the end, they went with they.
Okay. All right. I'm just, the is, and that was such a, it was a bad move, I thought, by The Ohio State University to try that. Because, and I'm a fan. I'm a big fan of The Ohio State. I got, you know, family connection to the university. But, and it's fun, you know, with the whole the thing, and they sell T-shirts and hats and stuff that say the on it. But you can't own that word. It's like it's like owning the letter A. You can't do it. It's just not
right.
Possible.
Well, and the trademark office told them exactly that. So they lost that one, but people were definitely searching for it. By the way, last year's term for Merriam-Webster was justice. That you could say, okay, we get that. 2017, it was feminism. 2016, surreal. This year, they will be over the next couple of years. So I remember when it was they, and there are some who believe, they say, wait a second, what if this is not about the non-binary form? What if it's the president, and everything that he says is they say? I'm not saying it, but they say.
Okay.
Maybe people are looking up they to see who they are.
All right. Always has to come back to him. All right, thank you very much, Stone Pony. Alex Stone in Los Angeles. Thank you, sir, for ABC News. Let's check in now. Jen DeSalvo, what's happening on the roads and the sky? News from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom is coming your way. The top of the hour. I need to remind you of that. Adam Hogue is now standing by on the Super Celebrity Satellite from somewhere in the northern suburbs.
Hello.
Hello. All right. Now, I got to ask you a question. Yesterday we had Sweet Lou Kanellis on. We were talking a little bit about the Bears' chances of making the playoffs, which are slim. Not none. Yeah. Not none. But increasingly slim now that you had the Rams win. And the Eagles win. Even I mean, the Eagles are behind them, but technically, you know, they've got a game up on them. The whole thing is not looking particularly good, is it?
No, it's not. And that Seahawks loss to the Rams the other night really hurt because I thought that was a game the Seahawks would win. They didn't. They weren't even really that competitive. And the Rams have the head-to-head tiebreaker against the Bears because of that unfortunate game at the Los Angeles Memorial Coliseum.
Yes, I recall it. There was crying in football in the game. There was crying in football.
Yeah, that was an unfortunate night there. And the way I've been describing this is the loss to the Chargers on the missed Eddie Pinheiro kick is going to end up being the most painful and hurtful loss of the season because that was one they had a lead and you had the kick and the coaching wasn't great right before the kick and it's just a game you had to have. The one against the Rams is going to end up being the most costly because that's an NFC game against the opponent that you could end up being tied with. So now you need the Rams to lose twice. They do have tough games coming up. They got to go to Dallas this week. They got to play the 49ers, but I don't know if they're going to lose both of those games. But
Dallas? Why is Dallas a tough game?
Well, because it's on the road and they're desperate. It's actually a pick 'em right now, according to the Vegas line. You would think the Rams might be favored, but the Cowboys they absolutely have to have this one. So I think that's what they're counting on. Losing against the 49ers next week could certainly happen.
Correct. 49ers look amazing. And Robbie Gould, of course, with the game winner. I hate to mention this, with the game winner in probably the best football game of the year so far was.
It was great.
The 49ers versus the Saints. It was amazing. That's a reason enough to have the Sunday ticket. It's the reason that I pay a car payment for my television to work in my home now. It's because of that. But it is very. It's a tighter NFL this year. It's NFC specifically than it has been. The NFC East. Lagging behind. I mean, you got, you know, teams at 500 in the lead there. And then you got two monster teams at the top of all the rest of the divisions, or at least of the Central and the West, or the North and the West, and then the South. New Orleans looks like the real deal. San Francisco, I mean, look at the difference that Garoppolo makes in that town. That's it's just amazing to watch.
Well, it's a really top heavy NFC this year because but I think at the top anything could happen. The 49ers to me have been the best team start to finish that we've seen. I thought that was a really impressive win in New Orleans the other day, but the Saints have they're all around pretty good too. And I think the Seahawks at home, they're always going to be tough. And I think the Vikings, if they have Kirk Cousins playing like he has shown he can play, are certainly tough too. The interesting thing is the Bears' opponent this week, the Packers, I still feel like they're flawed. They have Aaron Rodgers, but they don't have a ton of weapons around Aaron Rodgers. I think it's a flawed offense a little bit. And defensively, they've slipped here as of late. They have not been stopping the run. And that's a big reason why I honestly think that this matchup against the Bears on Sunday is very winnable for the Chicago Bears to go in there and get this one.
Well, it is the most potentially consequential Bears-Packers game in a long time.
Yeah.
And so it has, it means a lot. And it's basically, this is our playoff. Every game from this point forward is a playoff. It's unlikely they'll make the playoffs, even if they win this game. But it is fun. It's fun to have this be important. And always look forward to it.
It's making December fun. It's making these games matter. And if they win on Sunday, then it's guaranteed that the game on the following Sunday night against the Chiefs, against Andy Reid and Patrick Mahomes, you talk about some good storylines there, especially if Mitch Trubisky continues to play well. It's going to be a fun game no matter what. And because the Packers play the Vikings on Monday Night Football that week, the Bears cannot be eliminated from playoff contention before kickoff against the Chiefs. That is, if they win this weekend. So it's setting up to at least have these
counts, everything counts until Minnesota, potentially. But then Minnesota could count for everything.
But then it could, yes, if the Bears get the help they need. But I think, and this is actually something I've been working on and we'll have up at WGNRadio.com this week, is beyond the playoffs, I still think there's a lot for this team to be playing for here going into 2020. I know no one wanted to be having that discussion right now in December, but the reality is that this turn that the team has made here in the last month, Mitch Trubisky, what he does here in December matters a lot, and it goes beyond him too. You have players from like last year's draft class, like James Daniels on the offensive line, that continue to play well and finish the season strong. It changes a lot of the narrative that we had earlier in the season, which was this thing was kind of falling apart on Matt Nagy and Ryan Pace, and you have a chance to at least build a lot of momentum going into next season.
I'd like to pull that Kool-Aid away from you for just one second.
Sure.
Because didn't we a year ago think, my God, this team is really, this team could win the Super Bowl a year ago from right now. And when they went out in the first round in the most ignominious and awful way possibly imaginable, that we thought, all right, well, they'll be at least great this year. They were not great this year. They are likely to miss the playoffs.
Yeah.
And the question really is, even if they play well at the end, is Mitchell Trubisky the long-term solution? He probably is going to be regardless, but for Bears fans, is that really going to inspire people to be very excited about this team next year? If you come back essentially with the same team, and we have very few draft choices, right? Because we don't have a first round at the moment unless they trade for it, and I don't see that happening.
No, but they do have 2 second-round picks, so it does give you the opportunity to potentially trade up if you want to, or you could just get 2, solid players in the second round. There's starters to be had, certainly in the second round. And they're going to go out and they're going to address the tight end position, which has basically just been an empty spot on the offense this year. And I do think that I understand people being skeptical about Mitch Trubisky because there's just as much bad in the season for him as there has been good. That's why, again, I think these last 3 games against good opponents matter, because if you could keep this going through these last 3 games, well, all of a sudden, that's half the season. That's an 8-game stretch where Mitch Trubisky played well, and that certainly makes you feel better about this whole thing than you did about a month and a half ago. And that's what I get back to is, sure, I get it that coming into the season, the expectations were much higher, but where this team was a month and a half ago, you were wondering if there really was never a window of opportunity to win the Super Bowl, that it was all kind of a flawed team, kind of like the Jacksonville Jaguars a couple years ago when they went to the playoffs and then they came back and they completely were terrible from that point on. I think that this is showing us that the window is still open going into 2020.
I always, at this time of year, start to look around for other football opportunities. You know, I decide I need a football girlfriend.
Sure.
Because my wife has disappointed me. This is sort of the way I look at it. So the right now, it is totally fun to watch the 49ers. But in the AFC, Baltimore is by far the best show on turf right now.
Yeah. I agree. I mean, first of all, they have a good defense, but they have Lamar Jackson out there at quarterback who's doing things that we've never really seen before. I think the best comparison that you even come close to is Michael Vick, but if you actually look at the numbers, Lamar Jackson's been better.
So much better than Michael Vick. Actually, I mean, he's not only can he run like the wind, but he can also read defenses. He's unbelievable, and he's accurate as hell. All right, Adam Hogue, Bears Insider. Thank you, sir. Appreciate it, as always.
All right, thank you.
All right, we have the news from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom coming your way.
It's the top five on the Rokan Show.
Five.
Let's go.
Now, it's the top five at five on the Rokan Show, sponsored by the Hip and Knee Center, where they help you feel new again.
Ready?
Yes.
Yes.
Get on with it.
It's the Rokan Show, top five at five, every afternoon at 5 o'clock, sometimes at 5:15. On a Friday, because the Carnival Wagon gets in the way, and that's for good reason. Right now, we're checking in at
number five.
There you go. All right, House Speaker Nancy Pelosi announced the articles of impeachment this morning, and then, an hour later, announced a new bipartisan trade deal with Mexico and Canada. So a reporter asked, hey, is this timing a coincidence?
No, it's not a coincidence. It's just as we get to the end of a session, there have to be some decisions made. The timetable for impeachment is the timetable of the committees, and that came to an end with the hearing yesterday. We didn't know what day it would be, but the trade representative, Ambassador Lighthizer, who was quite remarkable to work with, he shared our values. He understood why we could not accept the Trump administration product.
Both sides are declaring victory on this, by the way. The president's tweeting about this is a great victory for his administration. Democrats are saying it's a great victory for them. So I guess there's just enough to go around. I don't know. We'll have to just see how this goes. It won't go into effect for 90 days because after everybody ratifies it, then you have to go through a shakedown period. It does even the playing field a little bit with Mexico, though, which at least that's the first headline out of it, is that it will require, especially in automotive, big changes, $16 an hour, the minimum wage for Mexican auto workers, starting in, I think, 2023, 2024, something like that. So at least it starts that heading in the right direction. Now, on the other side of the aisle, Kevin McCarthy, he's the leader, minority leader of the House. He went after Terry Moran from ABC News at their press conference, in which they talked about the impeachment and they talked about USMCA. But he went after Terry Moran because Terry Moran asked Kevin McCarthy, hey, was that phone call to the Ukrainian president really perfect, as the president says?
They just introduced two articles. And your question is about, is it perfect? No, the question is it impeachable? And the answer is absolutely no. Nothing on that phone call is wrong. That was a case that has already been opened. The attorney general was already looking into it. If the speaker had only waited 48 hours to release of the transcript, America would not be put through this nightmare.
All right. There you have it. There's both sides of that story today. Although, did you see also the things that happened in Washington today? We're talking to Brett Baer a little bit earlier. That'll be up for podcast coming up in just a few minutes, if you want to hear that. These are the things in the Brett Baer, like, 9-minute interview, 8-minute interview, whatever it ended up being. There were six different stories that on any given day or week or month would be the story of the day, the week, or the month that all happened today. You had obviously the impeachment articles. You have the potential for the vote next week. They announced that. The calling of witnesses, where both sides are threatening to call witnesses, whether it's Biden for the Republicans or whether it's Mulvaney for the Democrats. The Russian foreign minister was at the White House today in the middle of all of this. You had Christopher Wray, the head of the FBI, defending the Inspector General's report. And then the president tweeting, basically threatening the FBI director with his job. and a report on Afghanistan, which may, as history will remember today, may be the most important story that indicates that three separate administrations have been lying to us about the gains and the losses in Afghanistan. More on that tomorrow on this program. But first, let's check in now. Before we get to the 4-3-2-1, Jen DeSalvo tells us what's happening on the roads and in the skies.
Life after combat, a Marine veteran shares his continuing battles, an intimate portrait from the home front tonight on WGN TV News at 9.
Top 5 of 5 continues.
Number 4.
Reporters often prepared for anything when it comes to getting a story, but nothing could or should have prepared Georgia WSAV-TV NBC affiliate journalist Alex Bazarian for the shocking moment she experienced while on live television over the weekend covering the annual End Market Savannah Bridge Run when a man ran by her and slapped her on the buttocks.
People also dress up in costumes for this bridge run, so it's very exciting. It's very exciting.
So as this guy, and you see people kind of jumping up and around her and trying to, as they're running past her, trying to get in the camera shot.
Her face was priceless.
And yeah, and so she gets smacked on the butt by this guy who goes right by, and then she stops. Like, what the? That's exactly the look on her face. It was a WTF look. And then she continues on. Well, then this morning she was on with Gail King talking about this.
Well, the moment it happened, you're in disbelief.
Yeah.
You feel like, did that really just happen? So took some time to process, but it was extremely vulnerable. And I think I would say that the reason why, you know, maybe it caught so much fire is because the emotion is extremely relatable for women all over the world.
I think that's true. Now, the guy here, Tommy Calloway, was banned from future Savannah Sports Council races. So, yeah, that's a look. He didn't look like he was enjoying the race anyway. But his lawyer, he's lawyered up, says, while we regret the situation, Mr. Calloway did not act with any criminal intentions. Tommy is a loving husband and father who is very active in his community.
I love when they go with a loving husband and father. I'm sure your wife wants you to smack other women. Gosh.
So the reporter was then asked this.
Are you open to hearing what he has to say?
I think what is most important here is that he took my power and I'm trying to take that back. Whether I am open to it or not, I want to take my time with that. I think what it really comes down to is that he helped himself to a part of my body.
You know, the answer, a good answer is no. I don't want to hear from the guy. What could that moron possibly say that would be, apologize, fine. She can accept or not accept his apology. But she doesn't have to listen to the guy say anything to her, right? I mean, it's just such an act. And it is interesting because I think it is to a lot of guys who don't partake in this behavior, it's really surprising how many do and how many women in our lives have similar stories, whether it's a spouse or a friend or a daughter, you know, who has an experience like this. I mean, it's a crazy thing. Absolutely crazy thing. So this guy, imagine what he had to say to his wife, right? After it was so clear it was him, too, on the video. All right, checking in at
number 3.
Clint Eastwood is firing back following controversy over his new film, Richard Jewell.
Richard, you're a national hero now.
Thank you, sir. But I was just doing my job.
You always look at the guy who found the bomb just like you always look at the guy who found the body.
Jewell fits the profile of the lone bomber, a frustrated white man who is a police wannabe who seeks to become a hero.
We're running it.
Okay, so obviously this is a film about the security guard wrongly suspected in the 1996 Atlanta Olympic bombings. Now, that there's a controversy around this. The Atlanta Journal-Constitution is demanding a disclaimer be added to the film, saying that the film inaccurately portrays one of its journalists as unethically using sex to get information from sources. That journalist, Kathy Scruggs, died in 2001. Eastwood is defending himself, pointing the finger of blame at the newspaper.
The Atlantic Journal probably would be the one group that would be sort of complexed about the whole situation, because they're the ones who printed the first thing of there being a crime caused by Richard Jewell. I've just read a lot of material on Kathy Scruggs. I've read all the material I could find on her, and they all seem to corroborate the fact that she was somewhat on the wild side, and she's somewhat on the real wild side.
Wow. Okay. Well, Richard Roper, who has seen the film, will be here in the 6 o'clock hour on other business, but we will ask him about it, because I don't know. You got to remember that Clint Eastwood is 90 years old.
Number two.
Still directing movies. An unexpected Christmas mashup of Marilyn Manson and Mariah Carey has gone viral. The track fuses Manson's 1996 The Beautiful People with Mariah Carey's seasonal smash, All I Want for Christmas Is You. And the accompanying video pairs warm and fuzzy visuals, Carey frolicking in a snowy scene, with shots of Manson giving a typically raucous performance. I find it entertaining. I perhaps am alone in that, but I like it. And finally,
number one.
Marie Fredriksson, the Swedish vocalist who scored a string of late 80s and early 90s hits with Roxette, has died. Fredriksson and Per Gisel were good friends, but when they launched Roxette in 1986, they found quick success in Sweden with their debut album, Pearls of Passion. Released that same year, international success would soon follow, but it would take a remarkable bit of circumstance for it to happen. An American exchange student studying in Sweden heard this song. And he bought a copy of 1988's Look Sharp, brought it back to the United States, and gave it to a DJ in Minneapolis. And soon, that song was number one on the Billboard Hot 100, which would also then produce another top Billboard song. Listen to your heart. And then there was Marie Fredriksson of Roxette was 61.
The top five at five.
It's the Rokan Show right here on 720 WGN. There's a story today that has got me completely freaked out. You know, people do all kinds of crazy things in hotels, right? I mean, the hotel is basically designed as a place to go not behave like yourself. As a matter of fact, as I'm looking at pictures of our own Kevin Powell and Lauren Lapka at a hotel in Mexico right now for Socks on the Beach, they're doing things in that hotel they should not be doing. Just going to tell you that. They're putting their feet up on things that they shouldn't be putting their feet up on. There's all kinds of, there's people go to hotels and they treat them like a rental car, essentially, right? Well, the biggest trend in thievery at hotels, what would you imagine it to be? Would you imagine it to be the soap? Would you imagine it to be the shampoo? Or
I'd say mini bar. I was going to say bathrobes.
Right? Great bathrobes?
Oh, yeah.
The number one trend in theft in hotels is the mattress.
What? How do you get that out?
I want to know that. That's a very good question. Couldn't quite figure this story out, but there is theoretically an explanation for this. luxury hotels, specifically, you know, because they're selling the mattress. That's part of the whole deal, right? The Starwood started with this, right? They had that at their higher end hotels. There was a specific mattress that you'd be on, and the bedding would be better and all that. And let's face it, I mean, that's what you're really there for, right? I mean, I'm not there to hang out during the day in the hotel. Hopefully.
I never put that together, that they were trying to sell the mattress.
Yeah, but and you could buy the mattress. You could actually buy the mattress from, not the specific one you were on, because, I mean, you want to be on that. I mean, look, you know what people do on that mattress, right? You know,
don't go there, bro.
I'd like a fresh new mattress is what I would like. I want one with the tag on it that says, you know, don't rip this tag off. You're going to federal prison. That's what I want. According to the survey conducted by Wellness Heaven, a hotel and spa reviewer of five-star hotels, large items are the ones that go missing faster than the smaller items. 523 five-star hotels located primarily in Europe. They said that maybe in Europe it's easier. That would be harder because no one has like a big SUV in Europe, right? Everybody's got, I mean, unless you could somehow steal a mattress on a Vespa.
Well, also, too, in Europe, sometimes you're dealing with two mattresses because they put them together to make a larger bed.
Oh, that's true.
You
know? Could be twins.
So you got, right. So you got to take two mattresses out of there.
Well, maybe they just want the one. Well, maybe they're stealing half a mattress.
It makes sense as to how they're getting them out. They're a lot smaller than the California Kings that we're sleeping on in America.
Televisions and coffee machines come in second and third.
Televisions.
There are some nice flat screens. You got it. I give them that.
The coffee machine. I almost see the coffee machine, right? I mean, that's like, because that's not like hardwired in. It's just sitting there, generally, with the cord all wrapped up.
Everybody needs a Keurig.
You could throw that right in your bag, right? I could see that. That sort of makes sense.
One cup, 6 ounces, that's right. All it makes.
It's easy for hotels to figure out who took the item, too. Let's just face it. Less person in the room. Right? And then you get, and then there's always the, well, you know, it must have been the service staff that did it. Well, there are precautions that these hotels take to make sure their employees aren't stealing. And secondarily, why would you do that? Right? Bathrobes, hangers, very common still. But
good ones there.
Easier to replace than the mattress, but the number one trending, the year-over-year theft, is the mattress out of the hotel room. I'm telling you, if you want a mattress, that is not the place to get it, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, I mean, especially with the bed bug scenario going on these days.
It's a little used, you know?
Yeah, they tend to be. And I don't care if it's like the high-end luxury mattresses.
It doesn't matter.
No.
Yeah.
It's somebody else's mattress and they do things. They do, you know, here's something you should never do in a hotel. You should never take the sheets off the mattress and look at what's going on underneath.
Ooh,
there.
No.
There's been times where I'll pull out my sleeping bag if I'm at a semi-sketch motel and just sleep in my sleeping bag on the bed.
Yeah, that's a good move.
Yeah.
That's good. Then you have to fumigate the sleeping bag. I once checked into a hotel in one of those late night kind of things down in Florida where I was on the road and I had to, they just stopped anywhere. And I got in the bed. The bed was broken already, which tells me that there was some, you know, I don't want to think about the action that was going on before I got there. But I grabbed the TV remote. You know how the TV remote is kind of tapered, you know, so it sort of, you know, comes to a point at the bottom.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a lot of them are. So I grabbed the thing and I'm sort of, you know, I'm using it. I'm turning on the TV and then I'm gripping the remote and it literally slides out of my hand through the taper. Because?
Baby oil.
Well, something. A lubricant of some form was on the TV remote. And I'm like, oh, my God. And I call the front desk, and they're like, you know, they didn't speak English. It was Florida, but they didn't speak English. And they were like, I cannot help you. And then next thing you know, I'm sitting there thinking, I used one of my plastic bags. I used, you know, remember when you used to have to do that on the airplane?
Uh-huh.
With the plastic, everything in the plastic bag? I took all my toiletries out, and then I put the remote in the plastic bag and used that.
That's a good idea.
Yeah. Because I had to watch the television. It's the only way I could get over the fact that I had somebody's lubrication on my hand.
I'm surprised you don't travel with rubber gloves. I know you.
Oh, my God. That was one hotel you would not want to steal a mattress from. All right, Jen DeSalvo is going to tell us what's happening on the roads and in the skies. News coming your way from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom in just a few minutes, top of the hour. All right, now, we were talking about, last week, we had the former ambassador to Canada from the United States, Bruce Hayman, and he's in Chicago, and we had him in studio talking about other stuff that was going on. And he mentioned that we were soon to be getting the new USMCA agreement. So it was just about to get done. And today it was announced that it has basically been agreed to by all of the countries involved here. And the question that we have is, how does it actually affect us here in Chicago and in Illinois and the Midwest? Because obviously farmers have been looking for this because that has a lot to do with, you know, our trade with Canada, our trade with Mexico. A lot of it has to do with agriculture. And Bruce Hayman is back with us. He's actually in Canada tonight doing something I would imagine fairly Canadian. If it's in Canada, it should involve hockey, Bruce.
Well, we're not doing hockey in Montreal, but it is cold up here. But everybody's happy in Canada to finally see an agreement come together on what we call in the U.S. the new USMCA. They just call it new NAFTA up here.
Yeah. Well, there are a lot of Democrats calling it new NAFTA, too. And both sides are declaring victory here. The president is declaring victory. The administration is declaring victory. Democrats in the House and in the Senate are declaring victory. Is this a win for the United States of America? That's all I care about.
The answer is yes. And it's one of those very unusual moments in politics these days that we actually can see Democrats and Republicans both declaring victory, and you have Canadians and Mexicans declaring victory, business, farmers, environmentalists, union leaders, all coming together on a trade deal and saying this is a good deal. And so, you know, it's a moment of sanity in a sea of craziness, but, you know, we'll take it.
Right. It's a tiny little island with a little palm tree on it. You know, like the deserted island. That's exactly kind of what it is and all this. All right. Well, how does it affect us? What are the benefits for, especially here in the Midwest or here in Chicago?
So let's break this down. Two ways. One, remember when NAFTA came into existence and all of a sudden we woke up and factories were moving from the Midwest, from Illinois right down to Mexico. And they were moving down there because the wages were so low and the labor standards weren't good and the environmental standards weren't good, but they got away with just moving the factories and doing that. Well, this deal actually enhances the labor standards in Mexico, forces them to do it, holds them accountable, has inspection teams that actually come and go into the factories, raises wages if you're making automobiles, and does all of this. And I think that's a big enhancement for us in Chicago, knowing that it's going to be a much more level playing field in North America than maybe it was under the old NAFTA, the NAFTA that we're on right now.
Now, that's true in automotive.
It also modernizes this deal. Go ahead.
I want to just stop for 1 second. So that we know is true in automotive. So the minimum wage, I think starting in a couple of years for the Mexican workers is going to be $16 an hour, which, you know, at least makes it less attractive for the auto manufacturers to go and offshore, theoretically, you know, parts or assembly of cars. Now, the question is little guys, little factories. That's where we saw a lot of movement, especially out of this area, where little assembly plants or specialty plants and stuff like that, where it was just cheaper to do that, either China or Mexico. Are we better off there in non-automotive?
I think we are, because they're holding them to not only that wage increase in autos, but also a labor standard which will allow employees to unionize, to set better standards in wages and so forth in factories in general. So I think that this is going to be better. But you know what we're really facing in the Midwest is automation. And companies are closing down factories and just putting in robots. So we're not seeing the same loss of jobs that go to Mexico that we did previously. But the automobile industry was the one that was most dramatically affected because these were large plants. They moved thousands and thousands of jobs at a clip. And now I think it's going to be a lot better for us. And we do a fair bit of automobile manufacturing in the Chicago region.
Yeah, that's for sure. I mean, you got a gigantic Ford plant here.
That's correct.
And, of course, you know, the Fiat Chrysler up north in Belvedere. Let's talk about farming, though. Because obviously in Chicago, you got the Mercantile Exchange. They're affected by any kind of swing in the agriculture business. And then, of course, you know, throughout our listening region, lots of farmers. Are they benefited by this USMCA?
So the good news is that the president had threatened to blow up the existing NAFTA if he didn't get the new deal. So we've got rid of that threat. The fact of the matter is farmers know that they do a fair bit of trading back and forth with Canada and Mexico right now, and they're very important markets for us, and they're secure. But we did get an opening on dairy, and the Canadians have very much protected their dairy industry. We've definitely expanded our access to the Canadian dairy market and also an ultra-filtered milk, which is a high-protein milk. We basically have leveled the playing field there, too. So dairy farmers, you've got better access to Canada. Existing farmers, no threat to the trade that we had previously, which was potentially under threat.
Okay, explain that milk thing again. What exactly is that?
So what we do is if you take milk and you filter it down into a high protein, that basically this high protein. Yeah, we had an exemption with Canada, and we were selling a bunch of it. And then they went and changed the rules on it on us and basically kicked the U.S. out of that marketplace. Right. We opened that back up. That was one of those where Senator Schumer was calling me late Friday night when I was ambassador screaming at me because his dairy farmers were getting taken advantage of in upstate New York. And those were interesting calls. I'll share that with you some other time.
That should be in your book, Ambassador. Your next book.
Yeah.
All right. So obviously there were it up in Minnesota and places like that too. Those dairy farmers were very, which is obviously that's a huge dairy state, Minnesota. They were very worried about that.
Yeah.
All right. So I refuse to recognize Wisconsin because it's Green Bay week. All right. So let's talk about the losers here. Is there a loser? Is there anybody who is there an industry or is there anybody?
Yeah, there is. There's one loser here in this. And so I would say the drug companies got a special deal in the deal that they negotiated with Donald Trump a year ago. And that special deal was expanding patent life, making it very difficult for generics to come into the markets in Canada and Mexico, you know, kind of forcing them to raise prices on drugs over time. The Democrats took all that out, and so it's all gone. So the drug companies who thought they had a little sweet deal to raise prices and hold on to their patents for a longer period of time, they're probably disappointed today.
So will that actually affect drug prices in the United States?
So what's happening is people are trying to negotiate shorter patent life on drugs in the United States, and the Democrats said, if you lock in these higher, you know, patent lives up in Canada and in Mexico, you're going to make negotiations of making drugs cheaper in the United States more difficult. And so it's a win for us in the United States. It won't raise prices for us, but it will give an opening for Congress to potentially negotiate prices lower.
All right. Ambassador Bruce Hayman, thank you very much. Thanks for explaining that. Appreciate it.
Yep, pleasure. Good deal all the way around.
All right. Say hello to Canada for us. Appreciate it.
I will.
All right. let's not start a war. I thought for sure we were going to be at war with them before the end of the year. But it looks like it's okay now. The new USMCA explained in short. So now you can tell everybody in your family. Coming up in the 6 o'clock hour, you're going to hear an argument about the movie Lethal Weapon that you're not actually going to believe. Plus, the Golden Globe nominations came out. Richard Roper will be here to discuss all of that with us. But first, we've got the news from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom coming your way in 2 minutes. It's the Rokan Show, right here on 720 WGN. Richard Roper is stepping into the studio.
Stepping in.
Yeah, because he's got a story, which freaks everybody out here.
What did I do?
I don't understand what you told me you were doing this a couple of, like about a week ago. you told me about this. He said that you're writing this column for the Chicago Sun-Times, which you've been appearing in for the last three decades.
That's true.
And it's about the best action Christmas movie, because everybody credits Die Hard for being the best Christmas movie.
Yeah, you know, that debate has been going on, I think, like for a decade, right? You know, right around this time of year, you'll see on social media, Die Hard is a Christmas movie. Die Hard is not a Christmas movie. They even asked Bruce Willis, and he said it's a Bruce Willis movie because that's how Bruce Willis rolls. And Die Hard, you know, it is set during the holiday season.
Right. It's a holiday party. It's a Christmas party.
It's Nakatomi Plaza, 1988 mm-hmm. Christmas party, which I always thought was kind of strange, too, because, yes, it's a Japanese-owned company, but it's based in the headquarters here in Los Angeles, mm-hmm. and all the employees are American, and they have held the party at 8 o'clock on Christmas Eve, which seemed to be not the right thing to do to the employees. So the character of Holly McClain, right, John McClane's estranged wife at the time they're separated, she's got the housekeepers at home with the kids because it's Christmas Eve and she's got to go to the company party.
You know, but let me just take you back to the 1980s and why they were doing it like that. They were doing it in the 1980s like that because there was this whole anti-Japanese buying us and they are our masters moment going on in the 1980s.
And I guess those Euro trash terrorists led by Hans Gruber didn't care about the holidays.
Right.
So obviously it's set during the holidays. Some people say it's kind of a Dickensian story, Die Hard. You know, family man gets redemption by saving the family. Maybe. But the real late 1980s Los Angeles set action franchise kickoff movie that is a Christmas movie is Lethal Weapon, which came out the year before Die Hard. Die Hard was 1988. Lethal Weapon was 1987. Mm-hmm. And for people who know, of course, it went on, you know, both movies went on to, you know, become huge franchises. And Lethal Weapon, we've got Mel Gibson, who plays Martin Riggs. He is a cop on the edge, as they like to say back then. He's really on the edge because his wife, he's lost his wife. He has nothing. He's suicidal. Some say he's actually just absolutely crazy. And then the counterpart is Danny Glover's Roger Murtaugh, who turns 50 at the beginning of the story and is a family man, you know, who's been married for 25 years, has three wonderful children. Their house is decorated with Christmas decorations. Now, let's just early on, you got the classic scene, and they also this is the movie that kind of invented the pioneered the wailing sax soundtrack, which then was in every action movie for 20 years. So early on in the movie, here's Martin Riggs, the Mel Gibson character, contemplating suicide.
I miss you. Hey, that's silly, isn't it? I'll see you later. I'll see you much later.
The guitar there, too, of course. So, essentially, at this point, Ro, Lethal Weapon becomes It's a Wonderful Life. Mel Gibson's Martin Riggs is contemplating suicide.
Mm-hmm. Everything's going wrong for him. Yes. He's on the edge.
And then he's partnered up with, at just the nick of time, who comes up but his guardian angel, Roger Murtaugh, who shows him that it really is a wonderful life. And if you watch this movie, you look for the visuals. Like, again, Die Hard, there's Christmas decorations. But in Lethal Weapon, the Christmas decorations are strategically placed throughout the film. There's a certain plastic Santa that you see on the roof of almost every house, including a house that explodes one time. Danny Glover's character almost always wears a red tie. Mel Gibson's character always wears Christmas red, shirts, button-down shirts and sweaters. Darlene Love, who plays Murtaugh's wife, the great singer as well, She's always in red. When you see the Murtaugh home, Christmas lights, Christmas stockings, a ton of Christmas cards. Remember how people still like to do this? You put up all the Christmas cards by the chimney, or the stockings hung by the chimney with care. And then, of course, you go to Mel Gibson's home, and it's a trailer by the beach. There's no sign of Christmas, except for the Bugs Bunny Christmas special that's playing on the TV in the background when he's considering suicide. So there's all these constant references. Then there's a scene, Gary Busey, who plays Joshua, which is an old Hebrew biblical name, but it's actually kind of ironic because Joshua was a prophet and a man of faith, whereas this Joshua is a psychopath. He enters Murtaugh's home, and he wants to kill everybody. And what movie's playing on the television, even though there's nobody in the house? A Christmas Carol.
Good morning, sir.
What day is it?
What day?
Day of Christmas!
right. Shot the TV there.
More of the explanation. And I just this, I got to tell you, is a great argument that you could start at your Christmas party. This is a good... Richard Roper's giving you a bunch of ammunition here. We'll continue on with this. But first, Jen DeSalvo is going to tell us what's happening on the roads and in the skies.
Life after combat. A Marine veteran shares his continuing battles, an intimate portrait from the home front tonight on WGN-TV News at 9.
Yeah, now this is the opening song from Lethal Weapon. Richard Roper is here. He's written a column in today's Chicago Sun-Times that articulates the point that Lethal Weapon is, in fact, the best action Christmas movie of all times, not Die Hard, as so many people have tried to argue.
That's right. Die Hard is a Christmas movie. I'll give you that. Lethal Weapon is a Christmas story. The actual plot is the Christmas season is an actual catalyst. They make jokes and references, and, you know, there's ho, 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 I have a machine gun, the scene in Die Hard. But it's not really a Christmas story, whereas the entire arc here, and Christmas is constantly referenced. And they have these, all these kind of, when you look back at it, you know, pretty obvious touches. The first time we go to the police station, where Riggs and Murtaugh are employed with the LA, as LAPD cops, and Murtaugh's a sergeant, the coppers are practicing for the choir. Apparently, there's a cop choir, and they're singing Silent Night. And we've got a scene here. You can kind of hear them working on their carols in the background as Riggs's boss tells him about his own little particular Christmas moment.
You know, Roger, you're way behind the times. The guys in the 80s aren't tough. They're sensitive people. They show their emotions when women are like that. I think I'm an 80s.
How you figure?
Last night, I cried in bed. So how's that?
Were you with the woman?
I was alone. Why do you think I was crying? Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas. That was the Danny Glover character there. So, and you can hear in the background, the first Noel. So, you know, they didn't just do the kind of poppy... secular songs. There were like all these, you know, Silent Night, the first Noel, the parallels to A Christmas Carol, It's a Wonderful Life.
I wonder why you never thought of this before.
Because you were too busy digging, like, you know, first of all, Mel Gibson had, like, you know, the giant big 80s here. It looked like he was in the Bengals.
Right.
It was one of his, I mean, he had already done some good stuff, but this was the movie that made him, at the time, the biggest star in Hollywood, probably.
You know, I think the arc of Mel Gibson's career is fascinating, because when you saw him in stuff like this in the 1980s, when he first sprung to prominence in the United States, there was something so urgent about him. You were drawn to him because he seemed tough and vulnerable and just nuts.
Many of those parts, probably most famously in Braveheart.
Yeah.
You know, and directed Passion of the Christ, there he clearly was, you know, obsessed with that kind of, you know, on the edge, in some cases suicidal, super violent stuff. And, you know, Lethal Weapon is a hard R movie. The opening scene there, the girl, you know, she snorts coke, she gets on the balcony topless, and she jumps to her death, and it's all shown in graphic detail. It is a hard R movie, but it's warm-hearted Christmas story nonetheless. And then, you know, you got to remember, too, there's this torture scene in Lethal Weapon when they capture, remember, they kidnap Murtaugh's daughter. Tracy Wolf plays the teenage girl. She's been kidnapped by the horrible, evil terrorist thugs. And then they capture Martin Riggs and the Mel Gibson character, and they, like, he is tortured in ways that you rarely see even these days on film. They've got him tied up. He's got water all over him. Then they kind of hit him with the electric shocks. And he, of course, manages to escape. But even when he's rescuing everybody, he finds time to make a joke with a biblical reference.
Let's do what one shepherd said to the other shepherd.
What?
Let's get the flock out of here.
Okay. Hell.
Exactly. It's like, this is no time for jokes.
Okay. And, all right, so what you're saying is that Lethal Weapon is A Wonderful Life.
And at the very end, it's almost more of a Christmas carol, because through this kind of overnight experience, the Mel Gibson character of Martin Riggs really comes to understand. He becomes a better person. He becomes less cynical. And just like Ebenezer Scrooge, at the end of A Christmas Carol, he shows up at the Cratchit home, and they invite him in for dinner. And he's, you know, joined by the family. That's exactly what happens at the end of Lethal Weapon. He shows up at the Murtaugh home. He even has the bullet he was going to kill himself with. He was saving the special bullet. He has it wrapped in a red velvet bow as a present to demonstrate that he's never going to kill himself. Now he's learned. He's been saved. And then they cue the final credits and I'll Be Home for Christmas. So it is the most Christmas of all Christmas movies. It's more Christmas movie than A Christmas Story. Not really, but close enough. So Lethal Weapon is a Christmas movie, A Christmas Story. And if you watch it, you'll notice the constant visual cues. And a lot of the, even the lettering where it says everything must go. Mel Gibson's character is in a store where it's going out of business. Everything must go. Just like he's thinking everything must go. I'm suicidal.
You know, I've probably seen that movie on USA Network 30 times. You know, at some point, you know, you're watching, turning on it, and you stop on it. And none of this ever occurred to me.
Now you'll never see it the same way again, whether you like it or not. And yeah, look for the plastic Santa that's on the roof of several homes and even in the window of the neighbor's home watching the final confrontation. It seems to be the same plastic Santa.
Well, I do. I remember it blowing up in the house, the big house explosion.
There's a house that blows up. Yeah. There's several houses that are destroyed. But again, the house that survives all the attacks, of course, is the Murtaugh home. Even though, cars crashes into it and there's machine guns and bullets flying everywhere. At the end of the movie, they're still in the home, even though it's undergoing super repairs. And, of course, Danny Glover's character, Roger Murtaugh, has a boat and wants to become a fisherman or a fisher of men.
Oh, boy. Will. Yeah. Hey, is he still nuts? I mean, where are we right now in the pantheon of his
Mel Gibson or Mel Gibson. Martin Riggs' character?
Mel Gibson.
I think he's still pretty intense. But,
and where he just did another movie, right? He's kind of
it's weird.
Had a resurgence.
Yeah, because it's interesting you mentioned that because we talk about the various actors and major players in Hollywood that have been ostracized and are never going to come back. In some cases, probably deservedly so. But for some reason, even though there's all that horrific audio of Mel Gibson out there and other allegations, he's been at the Golden Globes and he seems to be, at least by most of Hollywood, they're like, okay, he can make money. But he still, he built his own church and he still believes that the new Catholic faith is way too liberal. So he believes in the priest turning his back to the congregation and doing the mass in Latin.
Yeah, there's his father was Mel Gibson's from Australia. Many people do not know that.
Yes.
I sounded like the president when I said that. A lot of you don't know that. But his dad was kind of an infamous character there as a sort of a religious bigot and cultural
bigot.
Got into
the Holocaust denial thing and a lot of other, dicey propositions.
Seems like there might, and when Mel got to the United States, he wasn't exactly, he was becoming a big Hollywood star, but then the bigger his star rose, the more he started sharing some of his personal beliefs with people, and people got a little bit offended. Yeah. He was some anti-Semitic stuff, and then there was the crazy recorded telephone conversations with his, I believe, and which is so interesting, Ukrainian girlfriend.
Yes, the mother of his newborn who kept saying, you need medication, she kept telling him. And she was right. And the stuff is horrific. Crazy stuff, man.
That is some of my favorite celebrity gone bad tape of all times when he's on the phone and he can't believe the fight that he's having with this woman. But now it turns out, you see, you can turn it around. There is redemption. The only guy, by the way, who's not coming back is Harvey Weinstein. He's the only one not coming back.
Kevin Spacey's not coming back either. I mean, talk about, in Hollywood. It was interesting because you and I were talking about Baby Driver recently, and Kevin Spacey, one of his many great performances as, the guy that kind of hires this getaway driver. And, that's just, you see what a great actor is, but I don't see him coming back.
Nobody's casting him.
They replaced him in that one movie. They reshot the whole film.
Right, just to get it out in the release date.
Yeah.
All right, speaking of movies, Golden Globes are out. We're going to talk a little bit about that with Richard Roper. We'll take your phone calls at 312-981-7200. And we've got the news coming your way from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom, and that's right around the corner in 2 minutes. It's the Rokan Show on 720 WGN. Richard Roper is in the studio with us. He's got a column up at suntimes.com. It's also in the hard paper, too, I'm imagining, about Lethal Weapon. We've discussed this. It's a Christmas story. It's a Christmas parable that you say is the best action Christmas parable of all times. Better than It's a Wonderful Life.
But, well, listen.
There was a car chase in It's a Wonderful Life.
First of all, not to mention the fact that, George Bailey left the scene of an accident and might have been driving under the influence when he left that car there. But I got in enough trouble when I pointed that out. I still think that under Potter's regime, there was a lot more going on in downtown at night. You know, that's all I'm saying. They had
didn't look like a much better, like my kind of town.
There was the one place where it was like a fight night and a casino and showgirls in the same joint.
It's all good.
Right?
All right. The Golden Globes came out today. The nominations came out today.
Yesterday.
It's the beginning. Yesterday, I'm sorry. Yeah, it's the beginning of award season now.
Well, the thing is, everybody's moving up because I think the Academy Awards got tired of, because the SAG Awards have become a big deal now because everybody goes to that and it's televised. The Golden Globes are a big deal because it's televised and all the stars go.
The SAG Awards, by the way, stands for Screen Actors Guild.
Yeah.
People wonder, that's a stupid name for an award.
Yeah, I know. And it has the most pretentious, the trophy itself is the most pretentious of all because it's called the actor.
Yes.
So they have to say, instead of the Oscar goes to, and the actor goes to.
The actor. They actually call the actor.
The actor goes to the cast of This Is Us. And then 50 people go up there, and oh, they all holding their actors.
It is. We're both members of that union, and it is the most. So we can say this. We can criticize our own family. It is the most pretentious award ceremony of all times. You think the Oscars takes itself seriously?
Yeah, no way.
The SAG
more.
Awards acts like it's the Oscars from 1939.
They give us speeches about how hard it is to be an actor.
Yes.
And all the out of work actors who are waitors are at home saying, yeah, I know.
You guys didn't go to the local party last year. There was like 200 actors and six of us radio folk. And oh, man. Oh, man. Yeah.
Yeah.
A lot of people, I worked with him at Victory Gardens. He's not that good. He's a hack. You know, jealously, you know. But the Golden Globes, so everybody's moving up. The Oscars are actually, I think, February 9th this year. They used to be way at the end of February. So the Golden Globes
used to be
faster.
In April.
Yeah, I mean, there was a time there in April.
Yeah. I mean, they were the first Monday night in April. And I used to love that because that meant spring was here.
Yeah.
That was, to me, the indication that finally we had broken the back of winter when the Oscars were on television.
But, you know, I think they wisely have moved up. First of all, as you mentioned earlier, Ro, a lot of these big movies like The Irishman, Marriage Story, which is an Oscar contender, they're already available on Netflix. You know, the window has shrunk. Even as recently as 10 or 15 years ago, a movie would come out in theaters. Then you'd have to wait for it to come out on home video, maybe a year later. The window used to be about a year before a film would come out on DVD. Remember DVD back in the 90s?
Mm-hmm.
Now it's a lot shorter. You know, a movie comes out. It used to play in theaters. I mean, Titanic became the box office champ, not because it had such a huge opening, but because it made $25 million for 10 straight weekends. It just kept making, which would be $40 million. Now it kept the repeat business, the return business. So the Golden Globes announced their nominations yesterday, and they're going to have their ceremony in January. And then the Oscars will announce their nominations early January and have this ceremony in early February. Globes are always interesting because they get to include more people because they have comedy and or musical in some categories.
And they have TV and film.
And they have TV and film. So a lot of people, you know, they always like to talk about snubs, which makes it sound like an episode of Mean Girls. You know, like, oh, they were snubbed. Like, they deliberately omitted these people. But Game of Thrones didn't get the normal, you know, bounty of nominations it usually gets.
It didn't even get best nomination for best drama on television.
Which is, you know, I know people felt it was an uneven final season, but that was pretty shocking. Peter Dinklage, who's won before, although Kit Harington did get a nomination, which was nice. Jon Snow, he knows something.
Well, okay, the Golden Globes is run by the Hollywood Foreign Press Association.
Yes.
Which is fewer than 100 people,
isn't
it?
That's right. Yeah, people, you know, it's funny because it sounds like such an esteemed body. And the Hollywood Foreign Press Association is about 90 members of foreign press. The qualifications to get in the Hollywood Foreign Press Association used to be you have to have written four articles an entire year about movies.
And they would be published somewhere outside the United States.
Yes. And now there are more accredited journalists, but there's still every once in a while they'll track down a Hollywood Foreign Press Association member who's a car mechanic or runs a beet farm. Because once you're in, you never are out. And they love lording their power. So really, the Golden Globes, you know, you'll see a lot of times you can win a Golden Globe with 20 votes, literally 20 votes if it's split up with everybody else getting 15 or 16. And that's why once in a while you go like, wow, how did something? Well, because if you campaign well, and they're usually at the junkets, if you're nice to, and the foreign journalists are the ones who will usually say like, are you still sleeping with Angelina Jolie? Oh, my God, I can't believe you. You know, they'll ask the kind of, you know.
I'm Ro Khan from Horse and Hound.
Disrespectful, yeah, basically Horse and Hound magazine. So sometimes the choices are a little odd. A couple of years ago, there was a movie called The Tourist with Angelina Jolie, which was god awful, and she got nominated just because they knew she'd show up.
Right.
I mean, there was no way that movie. It was one of the worst movies of the year.
So we'll go, but the nominations are a precursor to what's going to happen.
Yeah, and some of them are pretty good. I'm a fan of some of them.
All right, we'll come back to all that. But first, let's check in with Jen. What's happening on the roads and in the skies? Rokan Show on 720 WGN, in case anybody asks. The Golden Globe nominations came out. Now, a lot of people are like, why do I care about the Golden Globes? What difference does it make? You know, here's the reason to care about the Golden Globes. You don't have to watch the show. But when the nominations come out, it gives you a list of things that you can watch right now during the holiday season. If you're traveling, you want to download something. If you're flying, you want to, or you're like going to somebody's house, you got to stay there and you got to, what are we going to watch on TV?
Exactly.
Because that's what you all end up doing.
Yeah.
So that's to me the best part of the Golden Globe nominations, because it orients you to things, because there's so much out there now.
Yeah, there's such an overload of content. I would actually argue that you should watch the show, even if you haven't seen all the movies, because it's usually more entertaining than the Oscars.
Right.
Because as people know, it's like during dinner, they keep the bar open. Mm-hmm. You always see people trying to get up when they won the Globe. They have to like go past, you know, the table where Julia Roberts is, you know, passing the Tattinger to Meryl Streep. Everyone's drinking. And also, I give the Globes credit, because Ricky Gervais is going to host. And, you know, Ricky Gervais doesn't care too much about the sensitive times we live in.
True.
And he's very, very funny. And he's done it before. And he will eviscerate people in the audience. And he will make jokes about things that a lot of other comics are afraid to make jokes of. He's British. He doesn't care.
It's true.
He can just go back across the pond.
Right. He can get thrown out of here. He makes more money back there.
Yeah. And he's great hosting it. He actually will drink on stage as he's hosting it.
Yes. Well, and half as the night goes on, the award recipients are all crocked, and there's always like the Cecil B. DeMille Award or whatever they have there, where they do some Hollywood legend. And it's always, by the time that person gets up, they're gone. I mean, I've seen Al Pacino. That was an ugly moment.
Yeah, I think even Oprah had too many kettle chips by the time she went up there. She looked a little giddy, you know, high on the salt. One thing I will give the Globes
and
credit
low
for.
Ceilings.
Yeah,
very low ceiling.
Yeah,
in television.
Exactly. Yeah, it is, because in the Beverly Hilton, right, is famously, you know, which has been there forever. It's kind of fun. I do give them credit for having that separate category of comedy and or musical. So a lot of actors and movies that won't get nominated because the Oscars are almost always so serious, at least you can get it. So, like, you know, for example, Eddie Murphy, who's so good in Dolomite Is My Name, probably won't get an Oscar nomination but has a Golden Globe nomination.
So Dolomite Is My Name is one. That's one of the. So I just want to cherry pick a couple of these things here that people can download or they can watch
it's
now.
It's a Netflix film, yeah.
That you may not have seen that might be worth seeing.
Really,
so Dolomite Is My Name you think is great.
Yeah, and Marriage Story, which is a film that, you know, it's the kind of film that critics and actors in Hollywood loved. I liked it. It's, you know, it's sort of a marriage falling apart. So you get it's, and Adam Driver and Scarlett Johansson are great in it, but it is 2 hours of privileged white people whining. And after a while, you're like, shut up, you're both going to be fine after this marriage dissolves. You know, you're a director, she's an actress.
Yeah, this show is 4 hours of white privileged guy whining too.
Nothing wrong with that. Yeah. But that's why, you know, for me, I do like, it's interesting too to see that where certain roles are positioned. A Beautiful Day in the Neighborhood with Tom Hanks as Mr. Rogers, he's up for Best Supporting Actor because the story's more about the journalist interviewing him. When people see the movie, that actually makes sense.
And he wins that. Because they want him to be there.
Yeah, although the other cool thing is Brad Pitt, they put him in the supporting character category for Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. And it's a great supporting performance. So I think it's smart sometimes to slot your performers in the supporting role instead of in the big lead category.
Is Angelina Jolie going to be there? Because she has sort of become,
I don't think so,
one of the regulars of that.
She's
Miss Golden Globe at one point.
Yeah, you know, and they've actually changed that now too. At the Golden Globes, they'll have the male children as well because they thought that was a little hinky. Sometimes they always have these 16-year-old daughters of the, you know, actors. I think it's somebody's sons this time around. I don't think she's there. She's too busy blocking all her father's calls at this time. You know, John Voight. Seems to be some discord there.
Best television drama, as we mentioned, Game of Thrones did not get nominated. Yeah. But Succession did. People really like that. You like The Morning Show on Apple TV+.
I did,
Plus,
yeah.
And The Crown, which I think is very, very well done.
Well, that's the other thing, too. The Brits tend to clean up at the Golden Globes because the Hollywood Foreign Press Association loves to give it to Dame somebody or Sir somebody else.
And another category here, too. Best Performance by an Actor. Again, Kit Harington for Game of Thrones. That's the only one. Rami Malek for Mr. Robot. This is the last season of that.
Yes.
Right? So people should.
He's still got his shiny Oscar for playing Freddie Mercury. He's fine.
You still can't get over that.
Yeah.
And Succession is in that. Brian Cox is in Succession, and people really like that.
Yeah, people who haven't seen that movie, it's about this, you know, sort of Murdoch-like, you know, giant media conglomeration. Brian Cox is the patriarch, and the sons are all trying to, and the one daughter are trying to compete to see who will succeed him if he ever does them a favor by dying, but he keeps coming back.
And again, all this is on television, but most of it is on television that you have to pay for, right? Network television doesn't get a whole lot of
love. You know, the days of the networks, usually it's, you know, the HBOs and the Netflix have the most nominations these years.
So best TV musical or comedy, Fleabag is a new entry, right? Also a British.
Yeah, people love that. I didn't love that as much as other people did, but that was a one-woman show that became a TV series that's been a huge hit.
It's shocking, though. I mean, there's shock moments.
It's
in
bawdy.
It. Yeah, the things
it's
that you bawdy, don't normally you. See on television.
It's frank and funny.
Right. And The Marvelous Mrs. Maisel, the one thing you know about the Golden Globe and the Hollywood Foreign Press is that they like things that are over the top, right? They like flamboyance and because Europe, you know, very flamboyant.
Yeah.
And that's a very flamboyant
show. Renee Zellweger will probably win for Judy Garland in Judy playing the title role. Best actress.
Got that. Also, Dead to Me gets a number of nominations here with Christina Applegate. So that's worth it. And, you know, my sleeper, Russian Doll with Natasha Lyonne.
Lyonne is a brilliant show. It's a twisted Groundhog Day. She keeps waking up and having to relive the day she dies, right?
Right.
She's unbelievably good in that. She's a great, great little character actress. I shouldn't say little. She's a great character actress. She's been around since she was a kid. She was kind of the supportive best friend of the American Pie movies. You know, you go back, but she always plays whip smart, hilarious, interesting characters, and she knocks it out of the park in that series.
It is so worth seeing, and they're making a second season of it, which I cannot figure out based on the premise of the show, and watching it all the way through, I still don't know how they're going to do that. All right, and let's just go to Best Motion Pictures here. Basically, what we're going to run into, again, because you're stuck between comedy and drama, but for comedy, what are your thoughts?
What's up there right now? I don't have the list in front of me.
The comedy, that's a good question because it just left my screen as well.
Well, this is the problem. I do have it in front of me, but there's so many categories here.
All right, so for drama, it's 1917, The Irishman, Joker, Marriage Story, and The Two Popes.
Yeah, 1917, we're going to be talking about that next week, I think, here on the show. It's a World War I movie that's getting a lot of traction. The Irishman, I'm glad to see it's getting a lot of love. Robert De Niro did not get nominated for Best Actor, but I think Pesci and Pacino did for the supporting roles. Here's an interesting little release from Netflix. They estimate some 35 million people have watched The Irishman in its first few weeks on Netflix. That would be a movie that has already made $300 million. So it's doing quite... And it played in theaters, limited release, and did well. But that's why Netflix can keep on churning out these expensive products.
Will it get snubbed at the Oscars because it was a release that screwed over the theater owners?
It's a possibility. It's. I would say some of the executives who are members of the Academy are not a big fan of this type of distribution system. Same thing with A Marriage Story. That only played for a couple of weeks in theaters. But I think the average voter doesn't care.
And Best Motion Picture, Musical, or Comedy, Dolomite Is My Name, Jojo Rabbit, which you loved, Knives Out, Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, and Rocket Man, which I loved.
Yeah, Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. It's interesting that they consider that a comedy and or a musical, because I don't remember any numbers where Leo and Brad danced. But it is wickedly funny. It's the best film of that group.
This is the only one that Rocket Man's going to win, I think. This is the
Taron Egerton's up too, I think, as well, right?
I think Rocket Man's going to do well with the Hollywood
Foreign
Press.
I hope so.
All right. Well, there'll be more on this as we get closer.
Sure.
Because then there's all the press that surrounds it. But it's interesting because now we get to start thinking about the whole entertainment thing. If you'd like to listen to a great podcast, there's one available where all podcasts are. Richard Roper and Rokon's Best Movies of the Decade, in case you want to check that out. We'll be on the Justin Kaufman Show coming your way in 2 minutes.
That's right.